And now, making good on that $50 billion pledge to Africa. Joining us is Dr. Mohammed Akhtar, President and CEO of InterAction, the largest alliance of American-based humanitarian non-governmental organizations that work around the globe. Dr. Akhtar attended the G8 summit in Scotland and joins us from Washington, D.C. Also with us is Roger Bate, a resident fellow of the American Enterprise Institute, a conservative think tank in Washington. Mr. Bates joins us from London. He also was in Scotland attending the G8 summit. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Doctor, let me start with you. We heard from Ophabia suggesting that one of the issues is that there is still a sense of paternalism coming from this body. You were there. In terms of how you believe they're dealing with this, is that fair?
No, I don't believe so. I think that one thing that that people fail to recognize that this is a people-to-people movement. 200,000 people plus showed up at the in Edinburgh to demonstrate on behalf of the people, and the billions of people around the world are pulling for Africa, and that's why the leaders acted. So it's the people here in the Western world who want to help the people in Africa in partnership with African people. And, of course, we have to go through our leaders to be able to negotiate and discuss the appropriate issues. So it's not an issue of being paternalistic or rich people telling the poor what to do, but it is an issue of people-to-people movement that really has started, and I'm so pleased that the focus is on Africa and that we are dealing with the common enemy, that's poverty.
Mr. Bate, I know that you have applauded the doubling effort in terms of dollars that the Bush administration has suggested that they will lend, but one has to question whether or not these countries, the G8 and others in the Western world, are going to be ready to also assist to pull Africa on firmer ground for trade, which ultimately in the long term will assist in firming up this country's stance.
I agree with you entirely. I think it's ultimately the downside of the G8 meeting was that there was no agreement on the removal of agricultural subsidies. Timetable for that, at least Tony Blair has tried to set one, I think supported by President Bush at 2010, which is opposed by the French. I think that would be a great step forward. And I would agree largely with the paternalism question as well. I think that there is a groundswell of, you know, desire to do something. I think there is some paternalism there, but I think to a certain extent it's required. I mean, the African countries themselves, perhaps the individuals, I know a lot of business people, I spend a lot of time in Southern Africa, you know, highly efficient, can do a great job if they're able to trade their goods into Western markets, and hopefully that will be able to happen more and more in the future. But on the other hand, all of the talk about good governance, when you have the African Union staying entirely quiet about Zimbabwe, for example, is there are some reasons to make sure that that if debt write-off is being given and large amounts of aid are going, that there are strings attached. So I think some level of rhetorical paternalism is probably warranted.
Doctor, how realistic is it to believe, and we heard from Tony Blair and others, if indeed African countries really want assistance from the Western world, they're going to have to some degree, if you'll allow this language, clean up their acts, particularly from the top. How realistic is it to be believed that we can see this happen in the immediate future, where we have seen some abuses in certain countries?
I'm very optimistic that it is possible to change the governments, and many governments in Africa have shown their respect for their own people and their respect for the people around the world by creating the fairer government. You know, South African government is one example that we know. There are others who have taken appropriate steps, and I think ultimately corruption is the main cause of poverty. And until we root out the corruption at the highest level, where the money of the people is stolen by their own people, we can't help the poor people downstream. We've been very successful in helping people to survive, to sustain themselves, but really to pull them out of poverty, we need to have the government's cooperation in this effort so that the rules and regulations, the processes within the government, their policies are changed in such a way that an average person can take advantage of the opportunity to make life better for themselves.
Mr. Bate, one of the key, perhaps the linchpin in all of this, is going to be the Bush administration. Tony Blair has been out front and very vocal. But if, in fact, the Bush administration does not shore up its side of this and go to the edge, if you will, of the cliff. One can believe that the G8 won't be able to muster enough power, enough monies, enough of a safe road for these countries really to walk through this. Do you buy that?
Well, no, because I think that, frankly, aid, humanitarian aid, obviously saves lives, but the history of development aid is very mixed in terms of its efficacy. So I don't think that money so much is obviously a good guideline in terms of effort and in terms of desirability of dealing with the problem from a government perspective, and I'm not sure that it is ultimately that helpful. I think corruption is a cause of poverty. I think corruption, unfortunately, however, is the manifestation of the institutional structures under which many of these countries live. And I think that until you have kind of rule of law, property rights structures that actually make sense for local businesses so that people can borrow against their house or whatever else it may be that they can actually set about putting businesses in place, then no amount of aid is really going to help. If you look at Ethiopia as a country, it doesn't have much of a property rights system in place. It is, I know it's dealing with huge conflict as well, but it's not surprising that the economy is as poor as it is. And I think that you only have to look, again, back at the example of Zimbabwe. Yes, there's been a reduction in press freedoms and political freedoms as well, but the reason that the economy has halved in value in the last 5 years is the destruction of private property rights. And if that continues and if that isn't followed through, then corruption just plays off that system, unfortunately.
All right. And finally, Doctor, if you will, you seem to be very optimistic. When do you think we will actually start to see, and very quickly for me, real change that the everyday man will see in some of these countries as this money starts to filter in?
Well, dealing with poverty is a long-term process, so we are in a marathon. So we're going to have some benchmarks along the way to see how far we have come. And I think our effort of the public, both in the developing world and in the developed world, is now behind this effort. And so you're going to see a lot more push at the in September at the United Nations meeting. You're going to see a lot more push at the WTO meeting in December to make sure that we have a fair trade, that the aid reaches the people where it need to be. And slowly we're going to start to see the progress being made around the world, as we have seen in Asian countries, India and China pulling themselves out of poverty. We're going to see the same kind of process taking place.
All right.
But it's going to take a long time to achieve.
All right. Dr. Achter, thank you very much. And Mr. Bate, thank you very much for stimulating conversation.